This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. I am me, Patsy with a Z, the last of the red hot book lovers, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper today. Wow, you know, this book I'm really excited about because I love elephants, and the name of his book is Blood Red Ivory, and it's by John Stamp. Welcome to the program, John.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Wow. You know, ever since I first was introduced to Peter Riva, who, of course, writes a series of books set in Africa himself, I've always loved elephants, and I've been overwhelmed, really, also with the books from National Geographic about elephants and what's happening to them in Africa. It breaks my heart. And so when I got this book, I thought, well, this is just the perfect book, perhaps to awaken people, because it not only is it a great adventure, it is also a very important book.
Oh, yeah, thank you. It kind of took a while to get Blood Red Ivory together. Ty Benhoff, my character, I'd sketched him out a while back, and it was kind of finding the right niche to throw him into, so to speak. And when I came across the story of the IAPF and the Akashinga and their mission to protect those endangered species, they just all kind of merged together. And I really like how it turned out, but I'm a little biased.
Well, no, it is. It really has. Now, of course, we're an NCIS agent and an FBI agent, and so people, we can thank Leroy Jethro Gibbs that everyone knows what NCIS is, because before that program, I think it was exactly as they portrayed it. Nobody knew, and I think today NCIS is probably the most respected and of all the government agencies. If people ask, you know, what agency do you really care about, I think it would be NCIS. So you've taken all of this, you know, knowledge both from NCIS and FBI. You have a degree in forensics, and you put it all into this book. And tell us the story, because I think it will touch a lot of people's heart. In addition to, I mean, it'll make their heart beat faster, because some of the action is really, you know, heart pounding. But it also, the subject is so important.
Yeah, well, it came about, like I said, I sketched out Ty Benhoff a while back, and it's funny with, you know, I have to guiltily admit I've seen like 6 episodes of the NCIS TV show. And I'm not, like, I know when you were talking about Gibbs, I was like, yeah, I know that name, right? I didn't want Ty to end up being like, you know, the Terminator with a badge type thing. I wanted him to be just a normal guy like every other special agent for all the different agencies that we have protecting America. But just a normal guy, not a trained ninja, not a trained like assassin or anything, just a cop and a good investigator. And he just happens to get on the wrong side of his management team at NCIS, who one of the executives has a bit of a corruption problem, but he also has the power to severely mess with Ty's life, and he does by sending him off to travel Africa by himself, going to some very dangerous places, putting on some very dangerous assignments, one of which happens to be a homicide investigation in rural Zimbabwe, where Ty is specifically chosen for the fact that it's such a rural location, such a tough location, lack of resources and a very high-profile investigation, the mix is right there to have him set up for failure so that they can, you know, get all their administrative vengeance on him and drive him out of the agency. What Ty doesn't know going into that is that he's walking right into the middle of a open, you know, ivory war between this group of female anti-poaching rangers and a an ivory trading criminal enterprise. He's just trying to figure out what happened to this sailor out in Zimbabwe, and instead he finds himself smack dab in the middle of a street fight, and then it just kind of goes from there. But you mentioned the you know, the background with the forensics and the different aspects of criminal investigation. I actually loved using that environment to as you saw, you know, trying to work a crime scene in the middle of lion country, ending up in a standoff with a bull elephant.
Yeah, you know? There's some. Yeah, it's much different from Abby Shuto's lab in NCIS.
I know that name too. But yeah, it's you know, every place Ty goes, he's just trying to file leads that he gets, and every place he goes, the people who, you know, the locals in the area are just telling him you're going to end up eating, you know, something out here is going to eat you. You're doing this wrong, you know. So I kind of just wanted to use the chaos that environment provided to try and, like you said, make it a fun story, but also, you know, that the whole ivory trade as a whole it's got a greater profit margin than narcotics distribution. It generates more money for organized crime year after year on the international scale than the, you know, what we expect as, you know, the cocaine, the heroin, all the international trade. And it comes directly off of these endangered animals that are very possibly going to not be here for, you know, my kids' generation to enjoy.
It's so incredible that people are still after ivory. I mean, and the uses that they put it to are ridiculous. You would think that people would understand that this is so serious a problem that there are less than, I think, what, 500,000 elephants left in Africa? Something like that?
Oh.
Yeah. And they're killing them.
I'm not sure the statistics.
Yeah. It's something like that. Just 2 years ago, they killed 25,000 elephants in one go. Just, they killed them in 1 month, 1 year. I don't know why this is being allowed. I'm telling you, we definitely need, you know, Tyrone Benhoff and explain about the women rangers, how they are involved in this story.
Yeah, it actually just came out of a article I ran into. I think it was a National Geographic article, and they also had a short documentary based on them. But they were a group of they're still active, but they're a group of all-female anti-poaching rangers trained by a former Australian SAS soldier. All of them come to this organization with a background of coming from a domestic violence background, some kind of trauma related. And this gentleman put them through a basic training program, builds them up. They run the organization. They run their jurisdiction, and they've been incredibly effective in those areas. When I read about those women, I was like, that was such an inspiring story. I was like, there it is. I got Tyrone sitting here ready to go, and these women are just so amazing that I have to, you know, have to do some kind of homage, I guess, to them, just to show, you know, just to illustrate it, you know, just to illustrate that people like that exist out there. But to your point of the you know, destruction of those wildlife resources, I have friends that do anti-poaching work in various agencies, and the sad thing is that, you know, we think of, when we think of it, we think of a bunch of fools running around at night, you know, shooting an elephant or shooting a rhinoceros and just to cut off a horn. But these people will go out and poison water holes, you know, the poison, the one, you know, resource of water for the entire population of whatever this given region is, poison it so that, you know, it doesn't just go away when your target species comes through. It just becomes a death trap that's always constantly moving. So the poison moves from the water to the animal, from the animal to whatever comes to feed on it. That animal, in turn, working its way up the chain, ends up poisoning the next animal to come to feed that. It's just a vacuum of life in these places, and it's a very difficult thing to kind of put your head around that people could be that you know, that ignorant and that ruthless. But at the same time, it's, you know, if we were in their shoes, you know, if we're in you know, some a guy living in Zimbabwe who has no means of supporting family or, you know, his kids or something, you know, how hard is it going to be for him to make that decision, you know, an animal versus his family? There's so many variables that go into those decisions, and by no means am I excusing a guy's decision to make that, but there's a lot that goes into it, and I try to go into it a little bit in the books, you know, when I'm describing my antagonist. You know, they're kind of a couple different sides of the tracks. I'm trying to show different, you know, ways that people come into making those decisions that do such horrific things and get involved in stuff like that. So I try to show a kind of a global look at the plot, I guess.
Well, I mean, the poachers are bad and really terrible, but it's the people who purchase the ivory. Those are people who should be prosecuted, should be... If anybody should be hunted down, it should be these people, because this is what they're doing.
There wouldn't be an ivory trade if there wasn't a demand for it. So, and those people are, you know, they're here with us in the States. We're one of the biggest importers of illicit ivory. They're over in Asia and Europe just so they can have mantles on their trophy, or so they can grind them up into some kind of completely disproven medicine that the traditional people think of that has been proven over and over again not to work. You know, it's kind of madness. But yeah, like you said, it's capitalism. If there wasn't a demand for it, nobody'd be shooting elephants.
Well, exactly. And I still don't understand why the international community hasn't really gone in that direction and arrested every single person who buys ivory, because there's no excuse for it, and the truth is most of it is used for this ridiculous idea of medicine. I hate to tell all these people, honey, there's blue pills, just get them and stop with this, because this is ridiculous. This is to kill an elephant, a beautiful elephant, to grind up the tusk for... It's ridiculous. I mean, it's so, and this is, you know, these people are educated. The ones who are buying it are not ignorant people. They're rich people. They're people who have educations. And I mean, you just sometimes it's hard to fathom why people are like that. But that's why I think it's always nice, I think, when a book has multi-layers, and your book does, because it has the action, but it also has a story of, as you said, you talk about the problems that they have having work. But I don't know, I get so frustrated when I think of them killing elephants.
Yeah, the same way. And you know, the thing is that, you know, you just mentioned that we've got people of means that still believe that grinding up an ivory horn can help with their sex life. But at the same time, there's science that has just come out in the last, like, couple of months, you know, looking at the intelligences of various species, and especially elephants, where they can, you know, they can attribute culture, and they can attribute language, and they can attribute social dynamics to these animals that put them high up on the intelligence scale. And it's every time I read one of those, you can follow it up almost just as easily with, you know, a mass of poachers taking out a herd. And you can't help but think sometimes that whatever we look like 100 years from now, I think the human race is going to realize that they created such a folly. And by the time we realized it, by the time our intelligence got, our empathy maybe got big enough to understand what we did, it was far too late, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think shining light on it is wonderful. And at the same time, giving readers, I mean, one of the ways to get people interested in something that they don't know much about is with a book. And it's happened with many subjects. It happened with slavery, you know, all the way back to the beginning, where writers wrote about it and people realized this isn't good, and for all sorts of subjects. And so I think this is important, and I hope that people will get this book, because you're a fine writer. Of course, tell us a little bit about your writing career, because I know I've read some of your other books that, you just have a passion for writing.
It was one of those things that I luckily kind of fell into. I fell into a love of books when I was a kid, and the only thing that saved me is I wasn't born 20 years later, or else I could have very easily fallen into being attached to a device, you know, nonstop. But I read my first, I guess I'd call it an adult book, when I was like 10. I started with like Jaws and fell into Crichton and Clancy and Elmore Leonard and further on Joseph Wamba, all those great storytellers. And every one of them, I mean, they all bring something else to the table, you know. You know, Benchley's Jaws had a way of capturing the entire country, you know, and the entire world, yeah. You know. Clancy had some way of being able to write technically, but also draw you into such great characters as Jack Ryan and Deng Chavez and John Kelly. That mix that, I don't even know how you do that. You know, it's like an architectural drawing with a big heart, you know? And then Michael Crichton, you read a Michael Crichton book and it feels like you're reading a movie, just the way he wrote in such a cinematographic way. It was like scene by scene by scene, just very well laid out and easy to visualize. But he also had that technical etiquette too. As I further wanted to go into the law enforcement world, I found Elmore Leonard, and then Joseph Wamba kind of literally wrote the book on writing police fiction. So for me, I've had a notebook in my hand since I was about 10, you know, always wanting to be that writer. But I couldn't figure out how to do it until I was about 36. that's when I finally was able to take an idea, sketch it out, and actually have a manuscript. And that was a kind of a police procedural slash horror book called Shattered Circle. That was the first one I wrote. But as far as you talk about my writing process, it was, I had just finished my master's degree in forensics, and since you're in Florida, I could say go Gators. I don't know what side of the coin you fall down on that.
But, definitely go Gators.
Okay, good. Okay, that's safe. But to get through my master's degree while working full time and still, you know, doing different things, I just took a chunk of my day. I get up 2 hours before everybody else, go to work when there's nobody around, and I'd get my research done, my writing done, my assignments done. So when I finished my master's degree, I had a huge chunk of my day where I had nothing to do with it. So I took that and adapted it to writing with a goal of 500 words a day, and just, I sketch out and a plot line, the hook, the climax, and then the kind of wagon train map that goes from A to Z. And, just 500 words a day, and then, you know, 6-7 months later, I had a manuscript done. I was like, that was fun, and I just like, I'll do another one. Let's just keep going.
So, and I think you have how many books now?
I've got eight.
Eight.
Ty Benhoff 2 is, I've got a manuscript floating around to publishers right now, but Ty 2 is out there, but it hasn't been picked up yet.
Well, I think that it should be, because I think Ty's great. Your writing is fantastic. Everybody Everybody knows who what NCIS is now. of course, Ty isn't always after redheaded women like Leroy Jethro Gibbs, but
only because he doesn't have time.
He doesn't.
Only because the case didn't allow it.
That's he's busy. He's busy, but. I think it's a great character, and I think you never got shipped out to Zimbabwe, did you?
No, I did. I did 4 months in the Horn of Africa in Djibouti, kind of where the story starts. I did spend 4 months there, which is kind of right in between Eritrea and Somalia.
Yeah,
we have a Camp Lamanye there. I did do 4 months assigned there. And it's Africa. I love being in Africa. I love the people there, and I just love the environment. It wasn't the green part of Africa like Zimbabwe, but it was all desert, which is gorgeous. You know, being an East Coaster from the South, I grew up in upstate New York, but I live in the South. But you know, when you can see nothing but dirt for miles, it's a whole lot different than the greenery that we have. That we have here on the East Coast of the U.S. So it was a different environment.
Well, you have a lot of experiences to draw upon and to come out with more stories, because I think you've hit it right with this character, and that's there's always more stories to be told, and I think it's going to be lots of fun. And I was very happy that you mentioned writing 500 words a day, because this month, October, I'm gearing up. I have 9 of my listeners who have signed up to do NaNoWriMo, the National Novel Writing Month. These are all listeners who have listened to my interviews over the past few years, and they've said to themselves, a couple of them said, well, I've been listening for 5 years, and you keep saying do this, and I haven't done it. And even during the pandemic, I didn't do it. And so many of them are saying now, yeah, you know, I could have written a book during the pandemic. So now people, you know, and it is a matter of just sticking to it, doing those 500 words a day, having that ability just to concentrate. It doesn't take the whole day. If you can take, as you did, an hour or two a day, and you know, in a year, you'll have a book.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's exactly right. I wrote my third book, spoilers, sitting in the front seat of my truck for you know, my time. I still kept my time, but the work circumstances were a little different. So instead of running in the office when I got there ahead of everybody, I just moved the seat back in my driver's seat, and I just typed out my 500 words. There, but I used it every day instead of, I think the problem some people get is that, you know, we think that this is an art form, or we think that it's a passion project instead of looking at it as a second job, right? So, you know, whereas my job goes from, you know, 8 to 6 every day, Monday through Friday, my second job, which is my writing, goes from, you know, 6 to 8, you know, Monday through Friday. And in that time, there's responsibilities and there's goals that you have to meet. The hard part is that nobody's watching you. Like during my real job, if I'm not doing my job, my boss is very quickly going to wonder why, and he's going to ask me some very pointed questions about it. But if I'm feeling lazy during my writing time and I don't bang out that 500 words, there's not going to be anybody except the dude looking back at me in the mirror that's wondering why you're not hitting your goal, right? So I think that hems people up when they don't look at it as a second discipline and actually block out that time as if you would any other job.
Well, I think you are a real inspiration for all of my listeners who are planning to write books or hoping to write books. And the name of your book is Blood Red Ivory, which is a great title, by the way. I
thank you.
Very catchy. And it's Some Cases You Solve, Some Cases You Survive. And the book is by John Stamp. And John, I think you have a winner here, and I hope that you know, as soon as you get a contract for the next book, you let me know the release date, and I will have you back here. Okay?
Oh, I will absolutely do that. Thank you very much for having me. This has been a really good time.
Okay.
Speaking of, since we're right around the corner of of Halloween, I did want to let you know that Shattered Circle, the book we talked about earlier, is free. It's free through the 28th.
Free through the 28th. Okay, well, I will put that on my website too, okay?
Thanks. I'm doing a Kindle giveaway through the 28th.
Okay. I will announce that too. It was great talking to you, John, and look forward to talking to you again soon, okay?
Great. Thank you very much. Take care.
Bye-bye now. Okay. Great. We're going to have a book buzz from Bria Burton, and she has interviewed this author. So let's go ahead with the...
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2022 dystopian, Hoster Girl, by Veronica Roth. The novel is available in print, ebook, and audiobook with stellar narration by Anna Caputo. Now, let's download the book buzz. What happens after one dystopia falls to another? Prisoner Sonia leads a meager existence in the all-but-forgotten Aperture, where former delegation members are confined but mostly left to fend for themselves. When the Triumvirate offers Sonia her freedom if she can crack the cold case of a missing girl, it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance that she can't pass up. Her ocular implant from the delegation becomes a useful tool for the agent assigned to Sonia, a former friend who betrayed her entire family to the Triumvirate. Outside, the world Sonia once knew is both drastically different and frighteningly familiar. A shell of what it once was under the delegation, yet Sonia's journey exposes many of the faults not only of the current government, but of the former, leading her to question everything she has ever known and believed. Heavy with noir overtones, Poster Girl presents an all-too-plausible future through the eyes of a complex and evolving narrator. Timely and thought-provoking, this Orwellian atmospheric novel gazes unflinchingly at concepts like government overreach, censorship, and what it means to be truly free. Author Veronica Roth's other books include the best-selling Divergent series, the Carve the Mark duology, Chosen Ones, Arch Conspirator, and The End and Other Beginnings. She lives in Chicago, where her hobbies include tennis and pottery. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. And I am so excited to welcome to Joy on Paper, Liz Ireland. Hi, Liz.
Patsy. How are you doing?
Okay. Well, I'm
so
happy.
Thank you for having me back today.
You are so wonderful. We're gonna have a pumpkin. We're gonna have a turkey. We're gonna have Santa Claus. I mean, we've got everything from you. You are multi-talented, absolutely multi-talented, and it is so much fun to have you on Joy on Paper again. Because, well, let's start with the Halloween one, because you are as sweet as a cupcake.
Oh, thank you. Well, happy Halloween, for one thing.
Yeah.
Well, the book I've got out is called, the book is Halloween Cupcake Murder. It's actually an anthology that includes stories by me, Liz Ireland, and the author Carlene O'Connor and Carol J. Perry. So it's three different novellas in one book, which is a lot of fun. And the theme of the book, of course, is cupcakes, Halloween cupcakes.
Well,
so
Carol was on the program a week ago, and she said she was told was cupcake and Halloween and go and murder. And that's three.
Exactly. Yeah, it's sort of fun because, you know, the editor will tell us, well, this is, you know, the theme is Halloween cupcake. And it's like being in a bake-off or something, or one of those crazy bake-off shows where, you know, you're given a couple of ingredients and then you have to just come up with something.
I think it's clever.
It's fun to see what everybody does.
It is. All three of you are different, but all three of you hit the mark with wonderful, wonderful stories.
Yeah, Carlene and Carol are just really talented authors. I'm so thrilled to be included in this collection with them.
Oh yeah, like you're not talented. I mean, you are multi-talented. I mean, you wear so many hats. Oh, you wear Mrs. Claus's hat.
Oh yeah, I've got a lot on the burner. That's for sure.
That's for sure. Well, I think it's a wonderful, wonderful anthology. Really, it does, as I said, hit the mark for Halloween, and I know everybody will really enjoy it. And you know, it's isn't it hard to believe that it's already October? I mean,
I know.
So we have Halloween, and then of course we're going to have I don't know if I mentioned last time that, you know, my sister is known in our area as the connoisseur of cozy mysteries.
Oh.
And she reads, that's all she's read for. won't say how many years, but I say a lot of years. and so she's an expert on cozy mysteries. And I think one of the ones that really gave her the biggest kick was your Mrs. Claus. She thought it was so clever that nobody ever wrote about Mrs. Claus. And then here you come up with the idea. And the new one is going to be in time for Thanksgiving.
Right. Well, it's sort of set up in the Halloween Cupcake Murder, because in Halloween, the Halloween Cupcake Murder story is called Mrs. Claus and the Candy Corn Caper. And most of the elves are preparing for the Halloween festival, which is going to include a bake-off. And the mystery in the candy corn caper is a kind of a dual mystery. There's some missing candy corn, and there's also this rivalry between two bakeries. And one of the elves who works at one of the bakeries, whose name is Wink Jolly Flake, he ends up dead next to a candy corn cupcake,
which is
very sad.
That's
but, you know,
very
they have
sad.
To figure out, you know, is it the bakery's rival bakers who are, you know, causing the mayhem, or is it the people who stole the candy corn? It's, you know, that's the mystery. But there's also a side story of elves getting ready for their first Thanksgiving in Santaland, because April Claus, Mrs. Claus, is originally from the United States. And they thought it would be nice to have a real Thanksgiving celebration for her. And, you know, like everything that the elves do, it kind of gets out of control. Plans that start small kind of balloon into, you know, huge things. So they've got, you know, you know, Macy's Day style parade that's going to happen in Christmastown. And the elves at Castle Kringle, where Mrs. Claus lives, they have mail ordered a turkey. And of course, that goes kind of awry, and the wrong bird gets sent, and it's also a live bird. So, but Gobbles the turkey finally does arrive at Santa Land and is being kept in Castle Kringle. And then at the beginning of Mrs. Claus and the Trouble with Turkeys, which is the name of the next book, Gobbles is missing. He gets birdnapped.
Yeah,
and so that's where the trouble begins in that book. So.
Yeah, that's always bad. That's always bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta have the bird, but people, you know, have become attached. The elves have become attached to Gobbles, and so there's a big bird hunt going on to find him.
So. your mind. I'd like to. You know, they have these capsules now that go into the body. Like, what was that? What was that old?
Oh yeah. I don't think you'd want to go there.
Your brain. I mean, what is going on in that brain between elves and turkeys and Mrs. Claus and Mr. and of course Santa Claus and you know, and then on top of it, you've got another part of your brain that. Where you have a Cupcake Coven romance series, which is also so much fun. So you're like, whoo.
Yeah, I guess I should mention that. Yeah, I write a series of romantic comedies called the Cupcake Coven series, and I write that under my real name, which is Elizabeth Bass. And I had the most recent book from that series is called The Witch Hitch, which is about a woman who is about to be married, and strange things start happening to her. She doesn't know why. And also there's a strange woman following her around who seems like an oddball, but she finally realizes that she puts together a lot of clues and realizes that she might be related to this woman who is actually a witch. It puts a wrench in her wedding plans in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so. And she comes from a town named Zenobia, which you know, as I'm Patsy with a Z, I'm always partial to everything that starts with a Z. So I got a kick out of that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and your title, I love that witch hitch. It's fun to come out with these titles that, you know, authors are, you sometimes think there's so many books, so many stories to be told, and will there be a new and original title? And I thought, that's a cool one. I like that.
It's cool, and it also has, you know, like all these Kensington books, they have incredible covers.
Oh, my goodness.
They have the greatest cover designers at Kensington Books, and, you know, they have created a look for the Cupcake Coven books that's sort of reminiscent of Bewitched, the old TV series. It's got kind of the same font on it, and it's just, the colors are very bright and they pop, and I just love looking at them. So.
I do too. I think really always clever. Kensington, mm-hmm. across the board, they do justice to all of their authors.
Yes, they do. And the Mrs. Claus books also have just incredible covers, I think. You know, they just have such fun covers that I just always get, you know, a chuckle looking at them. So it makes promoting them such a pleasure, you know, because it's great to. I'm sorry we're on radio, so I can't hold one up.
Yeah, me too. But I will have them on my website, and people can see them all. I'm going to put three of them on my website when I load up this interview, because I want people to see all of the covers, and just to imagine for a minute, just think what's in that head of hers. Because most people, you know, they're struggling with one book, and then here you have all these books. But it's because you have a lot of ideas, and that's a wonderful thing. And NaNoWriMo is coming up, and I have nine listeners who have signed up to do NaNoWriMo this year.
Oh, excellent. Good luck.
Yeah,
good luck.
I wish. I'm thinking that NaNoWriMo should start paying me a finder's fee, you know. I'm getting these people for them. But these are all people who have been listening, most of them for many years, and they just never listened to me before. But they got through the pandemic and they realized I could have written a book during the pandemic. I was doing nothing, you know, cleaning my closets. And they didn't have that idea. As I keep telling them, all you have to do is sit down and have some discipline and write so many pages a day. And that's, you know, the nice thing about NaNoWriMo, it is a challenge that you write 50,000 words in a month. Not that that book is going to be ready to be published, but it shows you, it teaches you that you have the ability to do that. That if you can do that, if you can write 50,000 words in 1 month, think if you take a whole year to write 1,000 words a day, what you can come out with, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what you have to do. It's sort of a marathon. Whenever you're writing a book, it's just you have to just take it day by day, you know, page by page, not sit around worrying about the end point too much as you're in the middle of it, you know. Obviously, it's better to think about, you know, where the book is going to be going, but, you know, on day by day level, it is, you know, try to do your pages and keep going, you know, just pace after pace, you know.
And you can always come back and fix things, right?
Yes, that's the best. I always find that the best way. I know there are authors who fix things as they go along, and I know one who does that, and it's just incredible. She's a best-selling author, and I don't know how she does it.
Well, Mary Higgins,
her first draft is basically the draft she turns in.
Well, Mary Higgins Clark was like that for the last 20 books. But she said, you know, in the beginning, it wasn't like that. But then she got down her craft, and every for the last 20 books that she wrote, when she finished a chapter, it was done, and she didn't go back to look at it again. But you know.
Isn't that amazing?
But it is a craft. When you learn and you have that discipline, you can do it.
It is a discipline. I don't know. I don't know if I'm getting better at writing books or not. It seems like every time I'm writing a book, in the middle of the book somewhere, I'll have to stop and think, how do you write a book? how do I do this? And I go to my writer's shelf, my shelf of, you know, how-to books on how to write a book, and look at them and try to get some inspiration from, you know, other people. Hallie Efron is my favorite. So.
Oh yes, absolutely. That she is the best. Well, yes. all the Efrons are so great. So
yes.
Just thinking about Delia Ephron, who's been a guest on Joy on Paper a couple of times, her writing is so terrific. But, you know, what is wonderful about your writing, in addition to the diversity of subjects, is that as one is reading your books, I found myself so often chuckling. Now, my sister laughs out loud. I chuckle like a sort of ladylike. But my sister, she will guffaw. She'll, you know that word guffaw? You never hear people say, she guffaws? My sister dies when my sister gets to a part. And she did in the last one with the elves. She loves the elves. They crack her up. They absolutely crack her up, and she's laughing out loud. And every morning she eats cinnamon toast when she wakes up. She likes cinnamon toast. So I tell her, do not read. Not read. You're going to choke on the cinnamon toast. There's some books you can't read. You can't read Liz Ireland when you've got a mouthful of cinnamon toast.
Oh, well, that's probably the best compliment I've heard. Do not eat cinnamon toast while you're reading this book. Well, you know, that's so gratifying because, you know, when you're writing these books, of course, you know, I get very taken with these ideas. But, you know, when I'm in the middle of writing it, I do sometimes, if I stop and think about it too much, I do think, am I a little crazy? Because I don't know if anyone will think this is as funny as I do.
Oh, no. Oh, believe me, they do. They do.
Yeah, okay.
And when my sister's name is Natalie, and I will say to her, Natalie, please. So when we get trouble with turkeys, I know I'm not going to let her have her cinnamon toast if she's reading.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Well, I am so, it's just so much fun to talk to you. Let's take a few minutes. How about wishing Carol J. Perry a happy birthday? Because, you know, she was born on Halloween Eve.
Halloween Eve in Salem, Massachusetts.
Isn't it wonderful? I mean, destiny?
That
was
wonderful.
That destiny?
Yes. Happy birthday, Carol.
Well,
multi-talented Carol. She's wonderful.
And she's having her 90th birthday here, in right here, and we're having, it's going to be a big birthday in the park, and she's invited everybody. Everybody can come
that
to her birthday.
That is amazing.
So anybody,
yeah, that's great.
You know, That's a wonderful thing about writing. In February, I had Eugenia Lovett West on Joy and Paper for her 100th birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And
wow.
She wrote a fantastic book, actually, about the Revolutionary War. And I'm going to be talking to an author in a little while who also has a book that touches on the Revolutionary War. And so it is so much fun. It is so much fun to see authors just writing and writing, and you can keep doing it forever.
Yes, until you drop, I guess.
That's it.
That's what I'll be doing.
And you'll be doing it, well, with this that head of yours. So you've got a lot of stories in there. So I think it's inspiring. And I know that for those of my listeners, those nine of you who are listening every time to every program and sending me, so I get these emails saying, oh, yeah, I think that's the right way. I never thought of that. And I'm gratified, you know, when my listeners are taking it to heart. And for example, now I'm telling them that they can write funny books too. They don't have to write serious books. Some of them, you think, well, you know, what's in the market? What's in the market is what you make it. If you write a book that's funny and other people are talking about it, as my sister talks to her friends and I talk to my friends about Mrs. Claus, that's the important thing.
Exactly. Yes, and you know, sometimes you can come up with an idea. And, you know, you don't know if it's going to work or not. I know one editor who, the Suki Stackhouse books that are about the, you know, the vampires that were made into the TV series. I know one editor who saw those books, and he had never seen a vampire kind of mystery before, and he just didn't know what to do with it. And, of course, you know, it ended up being a very, you know, groundbreaking kind of series for paranormal cozy mysteries. So it's sometimes you make your own genre, or you make your own trend.
Exactly.
Or you're in the vanguard. You don't have to just write what other people are writing. You can think of your own special story. So
be original and dig deep into those gray cells.
Yeah.
And I think your gray cells sort of light up like flashing little light bulbs.
When I'm lucky, they do.
Yeah, I think Hercule Poirot looking into your gray cells would say, my goodness, I'm multicolored.
Yeah. Some days I want those little gray cells to fire a little more efficiently than they do on other days.
Well, Liz, I think you're fantastic. I think your books are great. And, everyone, the Halloween Cupcake Murder is out. It's hardback, too.
Yes, it is hardback.
Whoa, it is beautiful. It
yeah,
is beautiful.
Great. Yeah.
So,
and then the Mrs. Claus and the Trouble with Turkeys is also out, but it's paperback.
Yeah. So, but it's all three are out, and people, start reading and get inspired and be inspired by somebody like Liz Ireland. And she's done it. You can do it and you can have fun and just get out there and read and be. We all need a little something to help us through the days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what reading, it's like a. It's I've heard it has the same effect on your body as meditation, because it, you know, you're concentrating, you're breathing, you know, your mind is in another place, so it's good for you.
Yeah, it is. It is good.
It's a healthy activity.
Absolutely. Well, again, Liz Ireland, and all three books are available. Just check it out, and also Elizabeth Bass for the other one. Witch Hitch, which I love this title. Again, thank you for being on Joy on Paper, and it's been a joy to talk to you.
It's been a joy to talk to you, Patsy. Thank you so much.
Okay, and you have
and
happy...
good luck with NaNoWriMo, everybody.
yeah. I think it's exciting. I did it. My goddaughter, Kanisha, four years ago, she said, you have to do it. You keep talking about it. And I had never done it. And talk about Thanksgiving. You know, I was having a big, big Thanksgiving. So I didn't have 30 days. I had to do it in 25 days.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Did you do it?
Yeah, sure I did.
Yes.
Well, I couldn't.
Well,
you can never disappoint your goddaughter, you know.
Yes.
She's my inspiration. So
well,
I did it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That is wonderful.
So everybody else out there, if you're thinking about it, send me an email. I want to hear. It's patsy.radio@joy... Joymail, patsy.radio@gmail, and I would like to hear more people, and I'm going to talk to those people. They have to pay me finder's fee. Okay. Bye-bye now, Liz.
Bye-bye, Patsy.
Okay.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Oh, she's so nice. Oh, I love it. I just love it. Anyway, everybody, remember what... I'm always telling you. I tell it every week. And remember, I am the last of the red hot book lovers. And when I tell you something, you have to listen to me. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. And you never know, and you won't know, unless you start writing. So get to it, and get those 1,000 words a day. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And I appreciate you, and I'm going to salute you. You salute me, and because I should have been a general. Okay, bye-bye now.